Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to journalist Steve Keen. But first, the old saying goes, when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is stop digging. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that sounds like sage advice for a debt as well. When you find yourself with unpayable debts, the first thing to do ought to be to stop racking up debts. That makes some sense, Stacy.
Maybe some people out there might not be old enough to remember the 2007, 2008, 2009 debt crisis, but the whole world economy and markets crashed and everything went haywire, and we introduced all sorts of things like ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, and NERP, negative interest rate policy, and quantitative easing, QE, all this sort of stuff. And well, according to the IMF, a lot of what we've done is also rack up the debts. Global debt now at $164 trillion, or 225% of GDP, International Monetary Fund warns. The world is now 12% of GDP deeper in debt than it was at peak debt cycle during the financial crisis in 2009, hitting a whopping $164 trillion. So deeper in debt, I think you're supposed to stop digging when you find yourself in a hole.
Yeah, I guess one of the differences between this debt cycle or debt phenomenon and in previous ones is that I believe going back historically, different countries would get into debt and it would affect them and it would affect the global economy. This is interesting because the entire world is going in massively in debt. And so, you know, we have Steve Keen coming up here in a moment, who's really one of the premier experts on all tracking all this and analyzing it all. But it just seems I guess you could say impossible.
Well, in fact, China is responsible for 3/4 of the increase in private debt since the financial crisis. So China has been really bailing out the global financial system with their massive increase in debt. And it's not alone, according to the IMF. Two other countries, Japan and U.S., account for more than half of that global debt outstanding. So you say it's the whole world, but really it's the three biggest economies in the world, U.S., Japan, and China. So let's indeed talk to Steve Keen. He's an author, journalist, professor, economist, debunker, all sorts of things. Steve Keen, China's household debt, the speed at which it's climbing is quite remarkable. Its overall debt surged from $1.7 trillion in 2001 to $25.5 trillion in 2016. Have you ever seen debt climb so fast, and should we be worried?
No and yes, respectively, because if you take a look at the level of Chinese debt prior to the crisis, it was running at about 100% of GDP. That's just the private sector debt, which is all I really concern myself with a nation issuing its own currency. But it was running about 100% of GDP, and then the financial crisis hit, and suddenly China's exports fell by something of the order of 40%. You then had a massive remigration of people from the coastal factories where they work, where they were chucked out of a job. They were going back to where they were peasants. They weren't wanted, and there was social unrest galore. And the Chinese Communist Party response was to say, we've got to gear up the country as fast as we can. And the basic instruction was given to the banks, most of which are state banks, who basically lend to anybody with a pulse. And what you had was an increase in private debt from about 100% of China's GDP in 2008 to 220% now. And that, of course, the GDP has grown at the same time. So 100% of China's GDP 10 years ago is a lot less than it is now, because the GDP has been doubling pretty much every 10 years. So you've gone from that tiny level to virtually 30 trillion on a roughly $15 trillion dollar economy, and this has been the biggest credit stimulus that has ever seen in history. When I compare the rate at which China's debt grew compared to Japan's debt, which is the second fastest rate of increase in private debt in history, it's three times as fast.
Well, of course, Japan's increase in debt, when that happened back in the 80s, we saw the impact. They were buying up companies around the world and all the Japanese real estate soared. But one thing about China and the increase in debt there is you're seeing a knock-on effect to Australia, to Canada, to the United States, is they're buying up huge quantities of real estate across major cities across the Western world. How is that like something unique compare it to Japan? And do you see a knock-on effect in terms of when that debt comes due?
Well, this is where China has actually got a bit more, much more flexibility and power than the Western economies have, because still being a fundamentally communist-driven state, they are going to continue pumping out government-created money to make up for the sudden collapse in credit-based money, because the dramatic expansion we've seen has been primarily in corporate debt and a small amount in household debt. So I think, I mean, I'm going from memory here, but I think the level of corporate debt in China is of the order of 150% of GDP, households about 50%. That's quite different to America, which was mainly household debt when their crisis hit back in 2008. But at the same time, China can, just like any country which has its own currency, the government can create as much money as it wants to and finance what it wants to do with it, whether that's a recovery or, you know, building the Hoover Dam or that sort of thing. What China's doing right now, apparently, because you can't get reliable figures from the Chinese Statistical Office, I've seen estimates that the level of government spending and excessive taxation in China is running at 15% of GDP. Now, to put that in context, that's three times the scale of the Roosevelt's rescue under the New Deal in the 1930s, and one and a half times, almost twice, the level of the Obama stimulus after the 2008 crisis. So what they're doing is fundamentally buying up the rest of the world using their capacity to create yuan. And this is and running a trade surplus at the same time. So they've got the foreign currency, they don't have to borrow that, and they're buying up assets around the world. And in some ways, I hate to make this analogy, you normally lose an argument when you do, but this is very similar to what Hitler did in Germany. He just basically ran the printing presses. He's actually following, of all things, the guidance of one Henry Ford, who, as well as being an anti-Semite of the First Order, also understood the monetary system. And a certain Adolf Hitler read his book when he was in prison after the 1920s and said, that's the way to get the economy growing. Basically, print as much money as you want, hire the resources, and bang, that's where the incredible military machine of the Nazis came from. Well, thank God the Chinese aren't doing a similar sort of thing, but they are financing the Silk Road, financing real estate purchases around the world, and they're doing it using government money. They've switched over completely from private money in a way that the Japan or America could never have done.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about what you're talking about there, China, and, you know, it sounds like Amazon. You know, Amazon never reports any profits. They just keep going into debt. They floated some debt to buy the Whole Foods acquisition, and eventually they hope to make it all work out. Is there a scenario that where this might work, Steve?
It's slightly different, Max, because, of course, Amazon's not printing Amazon dollars. China's got more freedom than Amazon has on that front. But what Amazon is doing is a very effective private, it's a good analogy, I think. They're doing a similar private thing to what China is doing. If they continue growing the capital value, so none of the shareholders are getting any dividends, what they're getting is increasing share prices, and they sell the share prices and benefit out of that. And so long as Amazon is fundamentally trading its share certificates for more leverage and lower prices to take over more and more markets, it can do this almost indefinitely. And in that sense, one of the ironies about Amazon as well, we talk about the market system, but the market system gives us these enormous command economies inside it. In that sense, Amazon's probably one of the world's biggest command economies.
So let's continue with China. If their debt, if their household debt is climbing so rapidly, do you expect the offset provided by the government and you compared it to the New Deal, and the New Deal, of course, set America up to be this great manufacturing economic powerhouse for the next few decades. Is that same sort of thing going to mitigate that debt pile, or do you see a similar situation as we had back in 2008, 2009, when the American consumer and the American household debtor, they basically crumbled the entire global economy? Will we see that from China?
No, I don't think we will. I think the mitigation factor is there, because what stopped the American crisis going as deep as the Great Depression was an incredible increase in government spending, which they only did after the crisis hit. You remember back in the days with Hank Paulson getting his $700 billion from Congress, and supposedly going to use that to rescue the debtors, and then he actually paid it off to Goldman Sachs and friends. So the Americans, you know, in effect, classic American corruption got in the way, and it was all done after the crisis hit. China is doing this before the credit slowdown has really hit. So you're still seeing a rising credit demand in China. And even though it's buying, you know, useless things like more and more high rises that don't have any people inside them and so on, so long as the cash flow comes in and people can continue servicing that debt, they can continue getting away with it. And if government spending is providing it because people are now working on infrastructure projects rather than working on building 25-story high-rises everywhere, then they can keep the cash flow going as long as they continue bringing ownership of those assets in. And the whole Silk Road project, I see, is a way of China trying to reestablish the dominance it lost back in the 19th century with the invasion of the colonial powers, particularly America and Britain with the Opium Wars. So there's a strong historical pressure behind them continuing to do it. They're not being held back by any belief in a free market or anything like that that makes the Americans fall over all the time.
Right. Well, the new Silk Road, that's a huge income-producing property that could help to pay down some of this debt. But let's talk about the kind of the global debt markets, because, of course, debt gets packaged and then it's sold and it's swapped and it's exchanged all day long on the global bond market. So China's been a great buyer of and hoarder of U.S. dollars, and now maybe not so much. How does this affect on a geo level, the big picture, kind of the debt, the relative debt between these countries? Is there one country that's not kind of like the loser at the debt poker game, Steve?
I think I'd see America as one of the losers, because it's really the private sector that gets trapped in these sorts of problems. The government can get away with it indefinitely. And of course, America being the reserve currency, it can continue producing reserve, American dollars, not just to finance domestic expenditure by the government, but also to finance purchasing imports. There's no limit to what it can do on that front. But it's the households can't produce their own dollars, neither can the corporations. And America's crisis hit when it had a private debt level of about 160% of GDP. It peaked at 170%. It's since fallen to 150%. Now it's rising once more, so there's a bit more credit demand in the economy. But that is going to start falling over as soon as the American, particularly the Federal Reserve, tries to slow things down by putting up interest rates. The Federal Reserve hasn't learned a thing out of the crisis. They're still ignoring the role of credit, still ignoring Minsky. So as they start putting up the rates, it's likely to mean people who are currently taking on more debt are going to say, oh, I can't afford to take that extra debt on now because I've got this, 1.5 times my income debt load around me already. As they stop doing it, credit demand will disappear and America will fall back into a slump again. Now, that's what Japan has been doing for 25 years. So I see the Americans as being the ones who are going to lose that particular hand of poker.
Well, also the household, I was just reading some news that house prices were up 7% last year. Incomes were up like 2.5%, 2.7%. It continues to do this. Economists are apparently shocked. They didn't expect house prices to continue to rise so rapidly as interest rates are also rising. But also rising are student debts. In America, you can't write those off. And by the way, you owe the government. When you try to default on those debts, you have the federal government knocking at your door and you're not allowed to write them off. And yet, I saw a remarkable statistic that over 40% of student debtors who graduated in 2008, 2009 will default on those debts. And here they have now a blight on their credit score going forward.
And the same thing applies in the UK, where not only do they have that particular problem, but the UK government charges an interest rate on student loans, I think, of 6%. Now, that's, that's double what you'll pay for a mortgage right now. It's 5-6 times what the government's actually paying on its own debt. It is an outrageous charge. And what it means is the millennials are going to be the ones who simply can't jump on the debt escalator. And when they stop jumping on it, that's when demand disappears and they fall into what I call the Japanese trap of turning Japanese. And that's where America is going to be. And every time it gets a bit of a revival, it'll fall back into the same trap the Japanese did.
Yeah, Steve. So whenever we talk, I tend to confuse government debt with private debt. And you are constantly trying to rein me in, saying, well, I'm talking about private debt, not so much government debt. But these two things intersect at the Reserve Bank level, in that the Reserve Bank is constantly bailing out private debt by buying back junky loans. And so going forward, ultimately, doesn't this kind of, if you have the Federal Reserve trading at 50 or 60 or 70 times leverage, these two things are going to collide, no?
Well, I mean, you look at Japan. Japan's your best example of what can be done in that situation. And despite their intentions not to do it, Japanese government debt's gone from 60% of GDP, or I think even lower than that, back in 1990, to 250%. And people continue saying, when is Japan going to fall over? The answer is never, for two reasons. One, it runs a trade surplus, and so it doesn't have to borrow foreign money to provide foreign goods. And two, it produces its own yen, so it continues doing this indefinitely. But I think at some point we do need to have a complete write-off of debt, reduce it down dramatically, and let us keep on going forward, because the main limitation that all these economies face is an encumbered private sector.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Steve Keen. Until next week, bye. Yeah.